So I think we can start now. Thank you all for coming. This is the ongoing meditation class every Saturday afternoon. For those coming for the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the room to my right, between here and the reception area, being held by Veronica. So, a very good teacher. So those who learn the beginnings of the meditation, how to start getting into it, this is the ongoing class. And in this ongoing class, today we usually focus on one part of meditation. And one of the things I wanted to focus on today is, you know, what is the purpose of this meditation? And one can say the purpose of the meditation is to clarify the mind. In other words, to give it energy, brightness, strength, courage, so it's not distorted. The old simile they used to use in Asia so many years ago was a simile of a... You okay? We got the internet okay? Yeah, okay. The simile of a lake in the mountains. And if there's a wind, even a small breeze, that lake will have waves or ripples on the surface. And if you try and look at the reflection on that lake's surface, there may be a full moon, like there will be tomorrow night, or some stars in the sky, you won't be able to see those. The ripples on the surface of the lake distort the image. And that's one of the reasons why that you have to wait till everything is perfectly still. When things are still and there's no ripples at all on the surface of the lake, you can get a perfect reflection of the moon and stars in the heavens above. Your views, perceptions, whatever you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, know, is not distorted, it's reliable. So in order to be able to know things as they truly are, to see things as they truly are, to see deeply into things. That's why we need that stillness of the mind first. And when that's established, it becomes quite easy to see what the Buddha said, the way things truly are. This is a straight saying of the Buddha. It's from stillness, from samadhi, you see things as they truly are. And of course, that's important for everybody in all parts of their life, whether it's about getting insights in the way to lead your life, understandings about what health and sickness are, understanding about deeper things, like who you are, or why sometimes we make mistakes in life, and what those solutions are, and how to deal with things like mistakes. All those insights come from a mind which is nice and stable still and can see things as they truly are. And that's even to the point, I love saying these stories, even to the point of, I know at least one person over in Cambridge who got a Nobel Prize in physics for getting this insight into, it may seem strange to you, quantum tunneling. But he got that final breakthrough after meditating, coming out of meditation. It just gives you an idea of the strength of mind once you've broken through all of the waves on the surface of the mind and get a true reflection, a proper understanding and view of things. That is one of the reasons why it is great to be able to actually to calm the mind down, to get it so still, to the point where these deep insights arise. And of course, insights, understandings, many people claim that they understand things, they've seen things, they've got insights, but how do you know that the insights you have are real? In other words, they are truly seeing things as they are. And the only way you can really know that is because it happens just after you come out of the deep meditations. Even things like recollecting your past lives. I say this because as many people here have meditated here for years, and it's nice to be able to teach right to that type of level. what happens to get those understandings, those clear comprehensions after meditation. When you go very deep in meditation, you know you're very deep because the body vanishes, you're blissing out, everything is nice and still. And then afterwards, when you start to emerge, you can do things like asking yourself, what's your earliest memory? It's a lovely thing to do. Because when you ask yourself, what's your earliest memory? First of all, you know, you can get memories from when you were a small kid, a baby. And sometimes those sorts of memories are not really accessible in the normal sense. The brain hasn't truly developed yet. But you're doing this by recollecting through your mind what was happening. And every time somebody has done that, they found out it is true. I remember this one lady who used to come here a lot. And when she tried this on one of the retreats, she came to see me afterwards because her recollection was as a young baby girl breastfeeding on her mother's womb. Only the trouble was that wasn't her mother that she was breastfeeding from. And it kind of, you know, you see these really clear images, it's like you're really back there. And as she was breastfeeding on her so-called mother's womb, she saw the face, and that was definitely not her mother. So she came to see me afterwards and asked, now, what should I do now? She was really quite concerned. So I knew her mother. I just told this girl, next time you are at home with your mum, just have an ordinary conversation, and afterwards ask her the ordinary question. When I was young, really young, I kind of had these images of my mum, and it wasn't you. And she asked her mum, are you really my mother? And her mother was quite shocked. What do you mean? Yes, I am your mother, she said. What's happened? And when she told the story to her mum, her mother was not so much shocked as intrigued. What did that woman look like from whom you were breastfeeding? And he gave a very clear description of this woman. And this girl's mum was even more surprised. And he said, I never told you this, but when you were young, we had a wet nurse, someone to breastfeed you. I don't know how you got the description of that woman, but that's very, very clearly her. And so there's experiences like this, which are not so much shocking, as just show you just the power of your mind when it's cleared from what we usually call the five hindrances. And in brief, five hindrances, just wanting, not wanting, sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt. So that is one of the jobs of meditation, to weaken those. And as those go weaker, the power of your awareness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And as your meditation is progressing, you will notice that the mindfulness starts to increase in its power with the weakening of these five hindrances, because whatever you see, you can see more clearly. You know, often just simple things like the color of the carpet. This carpet has been in this hall for about 30 years, I think, we built this hall. We haven't changed it, you know what we're like. Same old carpet. It's good enough. But I've seen this carpet for so many years. But you ask yourself, have you? You assume that you have, but you look even deeper into it, and the different colors on this carpet, and just the way those little specks or dots, whatever you call them, are arranged. And after a while, you can see something you've never seen before. You see patterns, you see colors. The colors become richer, more interesting. What's happening is your hindrances are getting weaker, and you see more beauty in ordinary things, more depth, you know, in the colors on the leaves. If any of you are interested in art, it becomes an amazing experience. You can see more beauty in nature than you ever thought was there before. It's like know, the windows of your mind have been cleaned from all of the dust and the grime of so many years of wanting and not wanting, your clarity of mind. And that's a wonderful thing to start to see. It also means that when you are in the meditation, it's natural your mindfulness becomes stronger and you can see more clearly. And you can also understand just what may be blocking the peace of the meditation. It's very little fears and very small sort of wantings and inabilities to let go, little attachments which a normal person won't be able to discern. They won't be able to see that simply because their mindfulness is not strong enough. The glasses are not clear enough. So in this way, this is... Okay, can you... Okay, Jacob needs a hand there. Here we go. That's okay. Very good. Okay. So these ways, the mindfulness really increases. And it means that you can see little problems in the meditation. And you can see so clearly the ways around it. Sometimes people ask you, I have this problem in the meditation, how to get around it. Why can't you solve it for yourself? And the reason is because the mind isn't still enough yet to actually to see your way around. And that's one of the reasons why these five hindrances, when you have the clarity of mind, it's not you just you see things beautiful, but the meditation gets much deeper. It becomes easier to do. And you get into some fantastic states of mind. And you can see your way deeply into, you know, the further into them. This is building up the power of mindfulness, the power of kindness, and your wisdom and clarity becomes stronger and stronger. And the surprising thing about this, I know that in Buddhism we're always supposed to be talking about suffering, but when this starts to happen, it's a lot of joy comes up. The reason why this joy and happiness comes up is simply because that suffering is getting less and less and less. Problems are just disappearing. You feel more free. The burdens you have in life become less and less and less. And in particular, one of those burdens which you can see very clearly disappearing is just your reliance on thinking. I know it's great to think sometimes, and in the Western world we celebrate great thinkers. But thinking can only get you so far, and if you think too much it can drive you crazy. I mean literally drive you crazy. And so that's one of the reasons why you can experience much more, see much deeper, feel much deeper when you stop the thinking and go into silence. And I think each one of you know that the silence is something in all spiritual traditions which is revered. And it's not just as a discipline to try and torture oneself, it's kind of to free oneself, to be able to see deeper, further. And you can only do that when you don't give things names, where you can just even like see the stars at night. That's a personal story because, being in that community of physicists, astrophysics was really an enjoyable part of my life. And I think I said last Friday, even one of the experiences which I still remember from that time so many years ago was going to one of the big observatories, you see the big domes and these big long telescopes and sitting in the chair on the end and being able to control where you were going to look. And just that evening, Saturn was up and clear in the sky, and just looking at Saturn's rings. The only amazing thing was it was live. You're actually seeing it there through a telescope. And you could see so much there, so much detail. And of course, it was incredibly beautiful. And so that beauty which you can actually see, that's a sign that your mindfulness is strong, that your hindrances are getting weak. Something like the beautiful parts of nature is, for monks and nuns, is quite safe. Because one of the things I always knew, you can't control, the rings of Saturn. You can't control a sunset. You can't control seeing this huge mass of ocean in front of you. All the beautiful parts of nature, they are delightful, but you can't control them. Therefore, you can't own them. You can't possess them. When the sun goes down, you can't sort of ask the sunset to come back up again. That's one of the safe things about these phenomena. They're just not going to lead to any type of attachments. You see them, enjoy them, and you have to let them go. So these are the sorts of things which happen in meditation. I don't know what job you have in this world, what your relationship is, you know, what your sexual orientation is, you know, what you're doing in this life, but whatever you do, just being able to meditate and free the mind from these wants and not wants, to allow the mind to have strength and not to be tired, that will actually help see things clearly, whatever those things are. And the last little story is there was this wonderful lady, Thai lady, years ago, Wani Nut, and when she came on one of my retreats, she had this very difficult job, and she had lots of decisions she had to make, you know, really quite horrendous decisions to make about whether to take a kid from the family or not, because the family could not look after them properly. And she had all these terrible decisions to make. She just left them on her desk, came on a retreat, and she was a good meditator. She never sort of thought about these issues. But she came to tell me about 3 or 4 days in the retreat, in one of the interviews she had, that she was just meditating there, and all these solutions came up. They came from nowhere. Didn't know where they came from, but she went back into her room, wrote them down, and then forgot about them, because she wanted to meditate more. And when she applied those solutions, when she went back to work, they were brilliant. And how could she see so deeply? And that's what meditation does to you. I mean, it takes away all these blockages to seeing clearly. You get so much innovation. And it's practical stuff which actually works and helps. That's one of the reasons why I can see no dangers at all in this meditation. And it's also great for your health. So many things it's wonderful for. It's for your health, for understanding one another, understanding yourself. At last, your mind has power. And now you're beginning to use it properly. So anyway, I can see clearly enough now that I'm talking too much as usual. That's the insight I've just got. So now we can actually do some meditation. So once again, because a few people came in late, for those of you who are coming for the first time, introduction to meditation classes in the room next door. That's with Ronnie, and this is the ongoing class. The difference is mainly that I usually address it on a deeper level, and we also sit for longer, 45 minutes. So because we're sitting for longer, I usually do the guided meditation to begin with, and then I shut up and let you just carry on, because I like peace and quiet too. My own words disturb me. And even for 45 minutes, it's important to be comfortable. Buddhism never was into self-torture. Instead of the saying, no pain, no gain, it's no peace, no freedom. So you start by being aware of your body. And a good little technique, you can say this to your friends, what do you mean by awareness? Everyone's aware. But first of all, the awareness has to be eventually quite strong and maintained in one place. And here we're maintaining it on our body and being quite precise, starting off with your feet. How can you be aware of your feet? What I do, I've just been doing this for years, I just ask my feet, "Feet, how are you?" That's when I see any of you, you know, old friends, you know, the greeting, "Oh, it's good to see you, how are you?" And this is just to make that connection, the fact that I care. I'm actually caring right now for my feet. They're important for me, especially in this meditation, so I can take care of my body, and then it will relax and let me be free to be able to watch my mind and go deeper into that. And I just adjust my legs slightly, makes them feel better. But also I am aware of the feelings on the skin of my feet and my toes. Each one of these parts of the body have a different feeling to them. And I can feel my feet and my toes. That sensation is getting stronger now as I'm focusing. And the more I focus, the longer I stay there, the clearer those feelings in my feet become. If I just look at them quickly, the awareness is not strong enough. I might miss a few irritations. They start as irritations, but they can become quite painful. So now I can see my whole feet. And just checking that everything is in a good place. Not a right place, there's no such thing as a right place. Just a good place where everything is safe and comfortable. And I can relax those muscles, tendons, whatever else is down there. And even, I hope this happens to you, even just relaxing my feet is actually pleasurable. It feels good. And that encourages me. I'm doing this and it's enjoyable right from the very start. So then I go past my feet to my ankles. They were quite tense a minute ago, surprising. But now I can just feel them. You ask me, what does it feel like? I don't have words for these feelings. So much of life we just haven't got a word for. And now I can feel the ankles start to relax. As they relax more and more, they too, that feeling also starts to become delightful. It's like a problem has been solved, only a small one and temporarily, but my body feels at ease down there, all feet and ankles. They're like they've been soaking in a hot bath. I go further up my legs to my calf muscles. Skin. Just making sure that I relax everything as much as I possibly can. Nothing is squashed, nothing is pulled tight. I'm not afraid and trying to put on a show. Everything is at ease. I let go. Get to my knees. You can see I just scan upwards from the feet up part by part. Knees don't have any real problem, usually. But I check anyway. My knees feel good. But still, I can sometimes feel kind of like a blockage somewhere. And I imagine just expanding my knees. So the blood vessels and the veins just expand. Any place where things flow, they can flow more easily. It's just an imagination, but it does work. For me, anyway. My knees feel more at ease. And go up past my knees to my thighs, and I just scan slowly as I go up from the top of the knees, the middle of the thighs, the top of the thighs. And if ever I do feel a sprain or a pulled muscle or anything, it's so easy just to stop there, pause. It's like you wish somebody well. Like I do go to hospitals a lot these days to help people who are sick. And sometimes that's what I do. Just focus on the part of their body which is wounded or is broken. And just give as much kindness and warmth. And that's what I do with my own body. Relax it to the max. That's what I'm doing to my thighs now, the muscles. And I go to my buttocks. All the time when I go to the buttocks, I always notice the pressure on the cushion on which I sit. It could be the chair on which you sit or the stool. I found that you can't relieve that pressure just that easily. All you do is to balance it. So there's not one buttock is more stressed and squashed than the other one. When they're even, I know that in a few minutes those feelings, those sensations will disappear, they don't change. And the body is comfortable. It's used to feeling that pressure on the buttocks. So the brain just turns off. And I go to my waist. And as you've heard me say all the time, I prefer to stretch my back at this point. It makes my waist feel good. And the back feels strong. I've just been doing this for too many years. But I still am aware of my back. How are you back? Years ago I had great problems with my back. Laying concrete, I kind of injured my back. So I know how it feels. Today that back feels good. So I go back to the bottom of my torso. And starts to scan upwards. It is actually scanning up through my intestines, colon intestines. But as I go up, I can still feel, you know, some organs in my back. I suppose it's kidneys and livers and stuff. I don't really know what's what there, but if ever I feel any tightness, any strange sensation, and I just pause there. I pause and wish that part of my body well. Relaxing it. bathing it with kindness. I do care about you, even though if I don't think about you often, because you do your job and do it well. Thank you. So much of your body is autonomous. All it really needs is just acknowledgement and kindness. It does it well. As I scan upwards, I soon get to my stomach. Had a good lunch today. Feels good. And then upwards past my stomach to my lungs. During the hay season, I do suffer from hay fever, so there's always some allergy somewhere. So it's good to be able to be kind and soft to my own lungs. Kind of saying thank you to you. They always respond. I never like forcing things like lungs. And I go up to my heart region. So my old heart, 72 years, you've been pushing blood around my system. You never failed me yet. Thank you. And past the heart region, go to the shoulders. And I've learned how to relax those shoulders by myself. Imagine like muscles, sometimes they get stretched. So just imagine both ends of the muscles on the left shoulder and then the right shoulder. On both ends, I let go. So I'm not pulling them. We're not trying to have a posture which we think is right. We're having a posture which we know is comfortable. And if it's comfortable, you can maintain it without any problem for a long period of time. And then I go from my shoulders down my arms. If you ever had an injury on your arms, just bathe it as much as you can with kindness. And don't just rush it. It's a beautiful way which you know you can aid the recovery of any injured part of your body. Sometimes it allows extra lymph or extra blood to go there. It relaxes areas which have been inflamed and stop healing happening. You go to your elbows. You don't try and like do magic and just being able to tell all of those feelings to vanish. Just soften them. Soften them as little or as much as you can. It's all really helpful. Eventually go past your arms to your wrists, and then your hands and your fingers. I love actually just checking out my fingers, because most of the time they are not in a good position. So I just change the position of my fingers. So my left hand fingers are underneath my right hand with my thumb slightly touching. That's how I was taught when I was a young monk. And even today I got used to that and find it a beautiful way of putting my hands together. My whole arms are now at ease. So So I go back up to my shoulders, relaxing my neck. Sometimes you can feel tension in the neck because your head is too far to the left or too far to the right. Sometimes too far forward and too far back. So I find the optimum position. And then lastly I go to my own head. The part of my head which I can be really sensitive of is the muscles around the eyes, the nose and the mouth. Other parts of the body just don't seem so important. They could be if they were, just go there and just be aware and kind. But those muscles around the eyes and the nose and the mouth, that's where emotional disturbances are displayed. And if I find any of those muscles are tense, especially if it's around the eyes, it's often because I'm trying too hard. So I don't want to try to get somewhere or get rid of things. I want to be here. So I can relax all those muscles. If that is your intent, to relax those muscles, you soon find out how. So I'm relaxing the muscles around my eyes now. With that, this part of my mind relaxes too. That part which tensed those muscles up in the first place. Anger, fear, wanting, desire. All those muscles which were tensed up by those ideas now become at ease. And when they do become at ease, please notice how pleasurable that feeling is. To have your whole face relaxed. No one's looking at you. You don't have to smile. You don't have to grimace. You don't have to play some sort of role. You just relax. Let it be. And that always feels good. So now I've relaxed my whole body. If there's some parts you've missed out, you can now include them. But for me, those are the important parts of my body. So now I can look at my whole body. You know, the legs and the butt and the back and the hands and arms and head. And everything in between. It's been deliberately, stage by stage, relaxed. And now it's delightfully relaxed. I can feel that sensation. It always comes at this time. The joy of relaxation. One of the reasons why I noticed that is like a piti sukha which comes from when the mind is relaxed and when the body relaxes. If I notice that now, it's easy to notice later on in the meditation. And it also takes me into a deeper sense of bodily peace. So I indulge in that for a minute or two. And I let that go. And just focus deeper into the mind. Did you know the way that I arouse the experience of the mind? It is by looking at that aspect of the mind, one of its qualities, called peace. How peaceful is your mind right now? And what does that peace feel like? Can you notice it as delightful? If you can notice the pleasure of peace, it's easy to stay there.
is the cause for such peace. It's abandoning the past, abandoning the future. And if you're enjoying the present, the abandonment, the letting go of past and present, sorry, if you're enjoying the present, then the past is abandoned naturally. You're not interested in it. The future you're not interested in, because the present is just so restful and pure and delightful. That's one of the ways you arouse, maintain and deepen peace, by enjoying this moment. And the next thing which happens, you focus on the silence. The silence is a refinement of peace. You trust this process. You don't need to describe anything, put it into words, or even take notes. You don't need to photograph your favorite aspects of peace. Let it go. Instead, enjoy peace. Get into silence. Silence is not something you do. It's what happens when you let go of naming and keeping records. And all these other parts of meditation, you'll find they will happen naturally. And I'm going to be quiet now to enjoy this meditation with you. It's getting close to the end of the meditation now. The deeper you go, the more gentle has to be the exit. So first of all, just know and reflect on how peace feels. You're just reflecting on your mind. If the hindrances have been subdued, you can feel it and know it quite clearly. And to know, how did you get here? What attitudes of meditation worked for you? What didn't? You learn much more from answering these questions yourself than you ever learned by asking me. How enjoyable is peace? And then you can start to feel your body again. You're gently easing yourself out. And all the time, my body feels so much more relaxed after the meditation. Feels good. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. As usual, please let the 3rd ringing of the gong take you out from the meditation. There we go. So if we can have the questions on the internet. Was the internet working today? Oh, good. Usually like doing the internet questions first, and it gives the people in the audience here time to get their brains going. First question. I meditated earlier today, was really letting go, and firework limiters appeared, and again I got too excited. The will keeps getting involved. How not to get the doer involved? The excitement when nimittas appear. How to do that is you give yourself these instructions when you start meditating by doing things such as telling yourself, if nimittas appear, I will not get excited. Simple as that. Repeat it another 2 times, 3 in all, and then just forget it. Because once you've given those instructions, it's as they stay in your mind. And you'll be surprised when the nimittas start to arise. It's like the mind is about to use its usual way of getting excited. And it says, no, I won't get excited. The point being that if you try to give instructions when the mind is getting very still, it disturbs everything. So you give the instructions beforehand when you start the meditation. Of course, you only do that if you know there's a very good chance you might get nimittas. Especially if you're doing retreats, then this problem comes up 1 or 2 times, and then the next time you meditate, you tell yourself, if this thing happens, this is what I'll do. And giving yourself clear instructions is all you need to do. But the thing is, you cannot give yourself the clear instructions when
these things are actually happening. It's just too disturbing. You give the instructions first. It's like the best simile you can give is like an antivirus. You put it into your computer, and then when it's needed, it works. The next from Indonesia. Hi Ajahn, what do we do to sickness or physical discomfort during meditation that keeps getting our attention? So the first thing, if it's physical sickness or irritation, I know that it depends on where you are in the meditation. Usually if it happens in the first 15 minutes and you've got like a sore leg or something, then adjust the posture. Because if it's just the first 15 or 20 minutes, yeah, you are losing some progress, but nevertheless, you only just go back a minute or two, and then you soon make that time up, and you can go deeper without the discomfort. But if it's deeper in the meditation, the strange thing happens is when you really get into it, and the meditation is very, very, very peaceful, because basically the body disappears, so you can't even feel it. So if you do have sickness or physical discomfort during the meditation and you know it's, you know, really physical sickness, then just open your eyes, adjust the posture and take a glass of water or something, and then actually focus on why did that happen? And maybe you have some sicknesses or some stuff which you have to deal with. If that's the case, then see if you can get to see a doctor or get better posture, get a chair or a cushion or something to try and make it more easy for you. Sicknesses don't occur all the time, they do come and go, so you should still have enough time to get some really good meditation. Just from Germany, how to calm the mind through this meditation to get rid of the belief that God instilled in me in early childhood that I might die from cancer and be lonely. Affirmations don't help. If you die from cancer, you're not lonely anymore. There's many spirits which you can hang out with once you die from cancer. Affirmations don't help. You know, what's wrong with being lonely? I spent 6 months without seeing another human being, just by myself, never talked to anybody. It's a beautiful experience. Being alone, in solitude, is not the same as being lonely. To make it very clear to people, I said during those 6 months, I was with my best friend, me. If you love yourself, or at ease with yourself, the idea of being lonely is just not there. A lot of times being lonely is wanting somebody else. And when they come, you want to get rid of them. And so that's the problem with loneliness. Solitude, enjoying solitude, is gorgeous. And Gloria, from Hong Kong again. How powerful can a mind be? Ooh, very powerful. I don't know what you wish to say. The best, what is the power? It doesn't mean controlling the world. It's being like invulnerable from the world. Can I tell a couple of the lovely weird stories? I don't know the last time I said this story here, but I kind of like weird stories. Like people who get into the really deep meditation, into the jhanas, they're invulnerable. In the time of the Buddha, there was one monk, this was one story, and he was meditating in the forest, nice and peaceful, and very peaceful. So when villagers collecting some mushrooms or herbs saw him, they thought that, you know, he was dead. And they were in the forest, so it's very easy to find some wood and make a funeral pyre, and they put the monk on top of the pyre and lit it. And they thought, that's much better to cremate this monk rather than letting the jungle animals eat him.
I knew some chants, I did some chanting for him. And then afterwards, you know, once a fire was lit, you know, the stress on lay people never ends. It doesn't matter what country, what century. They were busy people, they had to go and get their mushrooms or herbs. So they left, the fire was burning, the fire would do the rest. So they left him, you know, burned the pyre burning merrily. And then the following morning, they were quite surprised when they saw him come into their village for alms. Not even his robe was burnt. And that's actually the story in the texts. The stories, you know, from our modern days. It's weird just how this makes you invulnerable. There's one of the disciples over in Sri Lanka. He was a doctor. And one of his people in his group was a very good lay meditator and would often get into these deep meditations. And so he planned this. You know, the leader, this doctor, never really got into the meditation. He was waiting for his disciple to get deep. And when he did, he rolled up his disciple's sleeve, disinfected a part of the arm, got out a scalpel, and tried to make an incision. When he tried to make an incision, he was surprised the scalpel would not penetrate the skin. Doesn't matter how sharp the scalpel was or how hard he pressed, it just wouldn't go in. And so he videoed this. Someone actually has a video somewhere in Perth. They were going to translate it because it was, the commentary was in Sinhala. I don't know actually who's got it or where it is right now. But anyway, it was videoed. And then he told the meditator what had happened. Meditator trusted him. They were good friends, both keeping 5 precepts. So the doctor asked, "Can I try it again? This time with your permission?" He said, "Yeah, of course." So he tried it again. This young man in deep meditation, the doctor rolled up his sleeve, the patient's sleeve, disinfected the arm, and made an incision with the scalpel. This time it went into the skin. And then, of course, in meditation, deep meditation, you can't feel a thing. So the doctor just put a few stitches in the arm, sort of put whatever ointments were necessary, put a bandage on him, and then he came out of meditation. He didn't feel anything. Just be careful when you get into deep meditation. We might just cut something off. No, that's only joking, but that was actually a true story. And that's what can happen. If you don't give your approval, people can't even cut you. And so that's one of the reasons why. How can that happen? That's how powerful minds can be. That's even on your own body. It's incredible. Here's another monk. Do you like these stories? This was, I knew him, he was a very powerful monk. He used to give a meditation class in Wat Bawan in Thailand once a week. And one of the friends I knew, and she married a guy who went to my same secondary school as I did. And so, and if I was in Bangkok, they'd always invite you for a dana. But you know, she got interested in Buddhism because of the Westerners. And she soon heard about this monk, an Indonesian monk. And she told me what happened when she went to one of his classes in Wat Bawan, in the middle of Bangkok. That sometimes she realized something was up. She opened her eyes in the middle of the meditation. And she saw, "This is someone I totally trust, known him for such a long time. Any Thais here? From Thailand? Oh yeah, Sompong." Yeah, she was
a more mature one. That's a princess. And she said that during the middle of the meditation, she opened her eyes, and she saw this monk has had his eyes open too. And from his eyes, there were these like two like laser beams coming out from his eyes into one of the other meditators. It's like something you'd see on a movie, but this was real. And one of the reasons why good monks never ever ever do that, she freaked out. And she got up, left, and never went back again. Would you like to see psychic powers like that? People say, oh yeah, yeah. But if you did, then you would never come back. They're incredibly scary. The mind is incredibly powerful. That's the sort of stuff it can do. But be careful. Has that got you interested? Okay. So, those are just some ideas of how powerful the mind can be. So, any questions from people here? Yes. I did get the...
I have learned that mind can play games on you, so it deceives you, can make things big or small. How do I understand mind? Is it my friend or is it my enemy?
Your mind is not a friend, it's not an enemy, it's a natural phenomenon like everything else. But you don't need to be afraid, it can't really do you any harm. You know what happens sometimes when you are meditating? Sometimes you can feel, it's a common experience of the body like expanding, and like things getting bigger. And at first that may feel weird, but all it's doing is the barriers, the limits of your perceptions are being let go of. You can perceive things in a way which you're not supposed to be able to perceive. And that's what happened to me. You're sitting there and you, in a meditation, and it seemed like your body was really growing, very, very expanding. And then someone disturbed me. And that's how I ended up like this. I got lots of excuses. But no, that can happen. It's how it feels. And sometimes people can actually feel like they're rising up into the air. You're not. You're on the ground all the time. This is just how the mind, when all the limitations, the barriers, what is not supposed to happen, are let go of. You have these amazing sort of experiences. My advice to you is just enjoy them. They're fun. And then there's no danger there at all. Afterwards you come back again. And it's showing, the mind is showing you how powerful it can be.
I just got a question on how powerful the mind can be. When I think about the monks in the Vietnam War who self-immolated and were able to just sit down and close their eyes and what happened.
Yes, I remember seeing a video of that.
Yeah.
And do you know who their names were?
Not off the top of my head.
There was another demonstrator in Czechoslovakia who burned himself as a protest against the occupation of that land by the USSR. And they named a square after him, Jan Palach Square. Even I remember his name. Because that was politically motivated, and you get praised for that. What was done in Vietnam, no one really understood what those monks were doing and was not praised. But anyhow, there is more better ways to make a statement than immolating yourself. but I don't know. I remember when I was in Hong Kong, not this time, just a couple of weeks ago, but the time before, that there's lots of professors over in Hong Kong who are Buddhists. There's a Buddhist university, well, like a Buddhist institute, I think, in Hong Kong University. And I was talking to one of those professors, and there was something which he was from the United States, something which he was interested in, which really just got my attention, because I've been interested in this for years, but never been able to take it any further. That's in the Forum of Athens, you know, in the time the Greeks were just the most powerful republic in the world, that there was this Indian called Samana Tejas. Samana is like the Sanskrit word from like monk. And he made a sensation by immolating himself in a forum in Athens. And that's what it says. And I forget who actually wrote that. One of the scholars of that time put it down in the history books. And that's fascinating. You know, what actually happened? Is there any more information there? And you know, the Buddhist monks would go to Greece in those early years and made a sensation by immolating himself. And what exactly did he do? There's one of these other people, oh, you got me going now. One of these other people who I was always fascinated with, this guy called Origen. You know, even here in Western Australia, there is a meditation center down by, I think, Bellingup, called the Origen Center. And I was really fascinated that, you know, the place where I studied at Cambridge, in Emmanuel College, in the chapel there, it was built by Sir Christopher Wren at the time. This was, you know, Cambridge wealthy. But one of the stained glass windows there is of Origen. And he was a very interesting fellow because he believed in rebirth. And apparently all of his writings were destroyed by the Christian church at the time because of that controversy about believing in rebirth. But nevertheless, much of his philosophy was so powerful, and it connected that early Christian church with the Greek intelligentsia. And so anyway, he became just well noted, but his writings were destroyed. And I remember reading about him. Apparently he claimed that his teacher was a fellow called Ammonius Saka. And no one knows who the heck Ammonius Saka was. If you think about it, and reflect, you know how sometimes names are turned the other way around? My lay name was Peter Betts. Betts Peter. If you turn Ammonius Saka around, what do you get? Sakamonius. You've got it. Sakyamuni. Circumstantial, but very likely. He was a Buddhist. He became a saint in the early Christian church. I like stories like that. And he was really into that. He said, yeah, you've got a point there. But no one takes you seriously when you say things like that.
Ajahn Brahm. I'm a bit confused now. I want to say something, really want to say, but on the other hand, I thought, no, just say it, Eddie, you know? Okay, yeah. Come back to the power of the mind again, Ajahn Brahm.
Yeah.
You know, Ajahn Brahm, the Buddha was telling us our mind is the forerunner of all states. Like our stress, anxiety, it's from our thinking, okay? These are all very simple things, Ajahn Brahm. You understand it, okay? I'm not boasting, I understand. But this simple thing is unknown territory to many people, you know.
Mm.
You see what I mean, Ajahn Brahm?
It's much more.
Yeah, if they hear you, they believe you. I'm not in Europe. They won't believe me, and they get annoyed probably with me. The thing. I'm a bit reluctant to see, So the thing is, we have to this mind thing. No, it is the heart of the Buddha's teaching. That's where our suffering or happiness comes from, the mind. You know, so we should be more concentrated on this thing, expand it. You know. Instead of like some you go to like some talks, oh, they talk about vegetarianism and Buddhism. These are all sideline things, no? Like the mind, these are important things, no?
The mind is important. What do you think,
Ajahn Brahm? And just quickly,
how many people know what the mind is?
But many don't. Those is simple.
That's why we meditate.
Yeah.
And when you meditate, those five external senses disappear, so you can't feel. You can't feel the legs, you can't feel the back, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything, smell, taste anything. Those five senses disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're left with is that sixth sense, the mind.
Mm.
And that's right in front of you. That's where you really get to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, these are things which happen, just like remembering past lives. You know, you don't do this, but you know how it happens. You can read people's minds. You never want to do that, because that scares the heck out of people. So these are the things which happen. The mind can be just incredibly powerful.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you got a question? Oh yes, the KFC. Actually, that's KFG.
KFG.
KFG. Okay, that's happening at 5 o'clock, I believe.
Yeah, 5 o'clock through to about 6:30, and because we're not good at sticking to time, because we get so chatty. So it's Kalyana Friendship Group. It's the all ages group. We sit down with a monk or nun every couple of weeks and meditate, talk about the Dharma. It's just a really beautiful community. So come along, and it's here.
In here, yeah. Yes. The Venerable here will be taking it today. Yeah? Yeah, half an hour, yeah. So it is true, I do take Jasper's comment true. I do talk too much. So let's finish off now. So, and after we finish off, we can break for a cup of tea and this monk can have a bit of a rest. I'm going out to do a talk at somebody's house later on. Anyway, so please enjoy.